Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for turning out like this. Absolutely delighted to be able to welcome our speaker this evening, Marko Djuric. He needs very little introduction. Most of you will be very aware of who he is, but I'll just give a brief outline as to his background. Marko, I hesitate to say when you were born, because it makes so many of us suddenly feel so very old, was born in 1983 in Belgrade and is director of the Office for Kosovo and Metohija of the Government of the Republic of Serbia. Since 2011, he's been engaged as a researcher at the Institute of Political Studies. After Tomislav Nikolic's victory in the presidential elections, he was appointed foreign policy advisor to the President of the Republic of Serbia. Since May 2014, following constitution of the government under Prime Minister Aleksandar Vučić, he assumed the post of Director of the Office for Kosovo and Metohija. In addition, Mr. Djuric heads the team for negotiations between Belgrade and Pristina and is also head of the negotiating group for Chapter 35 in Serbia's negotiations on EU accession. He's been a member of the Serbian Progressive Party since its founding in 2008. He is currently a vice president of the Serbian Progressive Party. He's fluent in English and Hebrew, and with fair French language skills, I'm informed. The title of his topic this evening is The Belgrade-Pristina Dialogue, The Normalization of Relations and Regional Stability. Marko.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for hosting this evening, and I want to thank everyone for coming. Maybe a couple of introductory words about the reasons why Serbia is engaged in this dialogue. It is widely thought that the prevailing reason, that the only reason for Serbia's participation in dialogue between Belgrade and Pristina is its EU accession process and the fact that this dialogue process is viewed as a precondition politically and something which is a necessity to be done in order for Serbia to progress in the EU integration process. But the reasons for this, for our participation in this dialogue, are much deeper. Actually, I want to say at the very beginning that Serbia would be participating in this dialogue even if it wouldn't be participating in the EU accession process. This dialogue is for Serbia extremely important, and through this dialogue, we actually want to create, together with our colleagues in Pristina, necessary stability in what we consider to be our southern province. We want to use this dialogue as a tool to create a safe environment for our recovery from the post-conflict period from the 90s. We want to create a safe environment for the Serbian community in Kosovo and Metohija, which is still numbering around 120,000, according to our estimates, in Kosovo and Metohija. So, apart from being stimulated by the EU accession process, we are very much interested in normalizing our relations with Pristina, as this is the necessary prerequisite for creating wider stability, which is again necessary for political and economic recovery of our country. This being said, I don't want to speak a lot about the difficulties that this dialogue is bringing with itself, because it is obvious that it is extremely difficult to talk and negotiate with two sides having completely diametrically opposing positions on some of the main questions, including the question of the status of Kosovo. It is also not an easy negotiating position for us to negotiate, very frankly speaking, under the auspices of the European Union, knowing that 23 out of 28 members have recognized the unilateral declaration of independence. However, this dialogue is still extremely useful for us. The dialogue is often being criticized for not being efficient enough, but I want to say that in the past 4.5 years, since I'm involved in this dialogue, and the dialogue is lasting approximately, if I'm not mistaken, 5.5 years, we have negotiated about more than 50 topics, covering almost all areas of life, and we have more than 30 agreements between us, also covering various aspects of life, many practical arrangements from, you know, university diplomas, veterinary certificates, all the way to the most important political issues and topics, such as the question of the community of Serb municipalities, integration of police, judiciary, of Serb police and judicial structures and local municipal structures into the institutions in Pristina. I want to say that what is at the moment, I want to brief you a bit on the situation at the moment in this dialogue process. I think that we have, in the past couple of years, achieved a lot. We have, at least in the political sense, among other things, we have provided a certain level, a certain degree of hope to people that major problems will be resolved between Serbs and Albanians in Kosovo. By leaving a channel of communications open, we also created an important, so to say, safety wall, safety ventil for diffusing acute tensions when they occur, and unfortunately from time to time they still do occur. But our achievements have been, despite the fact that we do have the first agreement and that we do have a number of other agreements, our achievements have also been limited with the fact that we seem to be approaching this dialogue process with different goals. And this is my impression from very intense communication with both representatives of Pristina, but also with representatives of the international community. While our side is approaching the dialogue as a means for normalizing relations between institutions and normalizing day-to-day life of citizens, resolving practical issues so that, for example, a marriage certificate between an individual from Belgrade and an individual from Kosovska Mitrovica is considered valid, you know, in both jurisdictions. On the other side, our colleagues from Pristina are putting in the front the question of status, which means that, and they're all very often quite open about it, even highest officials are very open about it, they see the dialogue as a means for promoting their view on the status issue. And in that sense, our objectives in this dialogue are not 100% coinciding. However, there is a certain area in which our interests in this dialogue still coincide, and this is probably the reason why, despite all of the difficulties, the dialogue is still ongoing. At the moment, we are in a situation in which most of the elements of the first agreement regarding the integration of Serb police and judicial structures has been completed, which means that we have now a fully integrated Kosovo Serb police members in the north of Kosovo. We have a newly formed police region in the north of Kosovo, which is headed by a commander who is an ethnic Serb, with hundreds of police, former Serb Ministry of Interior employees who are now policemen in this new regional command. We have a fully established local municipal structures in practically almost all 10 Serb-majority municipalities in Kosovo, out of 38 overall municipalities. Still some work needs to be done in maybe two or three northern municipalities. We also have encouraged the Serbs, as you know, to participate, Kosovo Serbs, to participate in parliamentary elections in Pristina and to take their seats, which was the first time ever the Serbian government encouraged the Kosovo and Metohija Serb community to participate in parliamentary elections, and they did, and they took their positions. But this doesn't mean that, I mean, things are far, unfortunately, still from ideal. This is, when we speak about the first agreement, I'm listing some of the things that we did, but let's not forget that almost majority of the articles of the first agreement deal with the establishment of the community of Serb municipalities, which is supposed to be an additional political mechanism created in agreement between two sides, which is to ensure additional collective political rights of the Serbian community in Kosovo and Metohija, and thus ensure that Serbs remain there in the future period. Also, side agreements connected to the Brussels Agreement, such as the agreement on telecoms, which is currently very much in focus of our discussions with the EU and also very much connected with our EU accession process, as it is viewed by some member states as a finalizing this agreement is being viewed by some member states as a precondition for opening additional chapters in our dialogue on accession to the EU. We have this agreement, which is not fully implemented. We also have the agreement on energy, which is not fully implemented. And we have also a side agreement to the first agreement, the agreement on the bridge in northern Mitrovica, with the question of delineation between southern and northern Mitrovica, which is currently in the process of being implemented. Now, just to say a couple of words about the most recent developments. In August 2016, in September and in October, we have discussed and resolved a number of issues. We have resolved and unblocked the implementation of the agreement on bridge in northern Mitrovica, which was one of the key symbolic issues dividing the sides in past 16 years. And this has been done in such a successful way that works are finally, after so many years, underway on the reconstruction of the bridge, alongside with the reconstruction of the main street in northern Mitrovica. Also, I want to underline that this was done also with a lot of concessions on the other side, on our side, and that we are still waiting for the delineation between northern and southern Mitrovica to be completed. And we are not asking for this delineation for any other reason, but except to avoid future tensions, because there are still unclarities about where citizens of certain areas or of certain villages in this very volatile region belong. And also, apart from this, also in early September, we have agreed to, for the first time in many years, accept all license plates on the territory we control in central Serbia, which means that Pristina, bearers of Pristina issued license plates covered with stickers will be able to enter central Serbia from beginning from November 15th, which is very soon. Also, the bearers of those status-neutral license plates, so-called KS license plates, which are mostly used by Kosovo Serbs, they will have the right to extend the validity of these plates for an additional 5 years. Bearers of Serbian-issued license plates will also be able to use their license plates in an unhindered way, which is, I think, a good practical example of how some issues can be resolved despite the disagreement on the status. However, when it comes to the latest discussions on telecom, we were not able so far to bridge this gap, primarily because we were not able to close the deal regarding the transfer of property. The question of the transfer of property is something that is crucial for us. You see, we have agreed to isolate the question of property for the time being and exclude it from our discussions in order to avoid being drawn in a very extensive discussion and to avoid postponement of the implementation of certain already existing agreements. But the only way to do it and to isolate this question of property is actually to agree that the property will be transferred, as the agreement on telecoms clearly stipulates, that the agreement, the property will be transferred to the daughter company of Telecom Serbia in Kosovo and Metohija. it doesn't necessarily have to say from whom the property is being transferred, as saying from whom the property is being transferred would prejudicate in a way the status of all pre-1999 state and socially owned property, but we are flexible on this. We are still waiting for our colleagues' flexibility on this topic. And here I want to make an important point. I feel that the political climate for this dialogue is becoming increasingly unfavorable. Increasingly unfavorable. I think that our colleagues in Pristina are using every opportunity they can to narrow their own maneuver space in this dialogue. Because currently, this is my impression as a politician, the political parties in Pristina are actually competing amongst themselves who is going to take a tougher stance towards, you know, Belgrade-Pristina dialogue, the Serbian community in Kosovo, Belgrade in general, and we have a very strange situation in which, you know, with an unemployment rate which is unprecedentedly high, even for Balkan terms, in a situation in which, you know, levels of other social problems such as corruption, you know, high migration rate. By the way, you know, we have tens of thousands of people migrating from Kosovo annually. Instead of focusing on those crucial issues for the society, some politicians are deciding to instead, you know, find the culprit in what remains of the very small Serbian community in Kosovo and portray the community of Serbian municipalities as the key threat to the stability and the future of Kosovo, and also, you know, to portray Belgrade as being, you know, the reason behind the all economic and other problems that Kosovo and Metohija is actually facing. I think that the fact that there is such a competition among those political parties is actually very much narrowing the maneuver space Pristina delegation in Brussels has. You know, this is a legitimate tactics when it comes to negotiating. However, it really does influence the potential results that we can achieve in this dialogue. And also, you know, you may say that we don't have an opposition that is throwing tear gas in parliament, but the atmosphere on our side is changing very much. While last year, as recent as last year, the support for normalization of relations between Belgrade and Pristina and the support for this dialogue was more than two-thirds in our public opinion. Now, it is just a year later, it is quite the other way around. Now, 62% of the people in Serbia, according to latest opinion polls, believe that this dialogue is not, you know, to our benefit, that we should not participate in this dialogue any longer. 32% of the people believe that we shouldn't have, in the first place, at all engaged in this type of dialogue. And, you know, we have a relatively strong government, I mean, in terms of parliamentary support, but no politician is omnipotent. You know, sooner or later, you know, you have to take into account also the mainstream of the Serbian politics, which says that, you know, we should now see something good for the Serbian community in Kosovo and not just make concessions such as, you know, giving the integration of this and that, dismantlement of the civil protection, dismantling of various structures there, issuing of the dialing code, accepting license plates, accepting personal documents, and so forth and so forth. People are increasingly asking, when are we going to see this community of Serb municipalities so that our people in Kosovo and Metohija can feel some benefit from this dialogue? And the answer they are getting, actually, is the answer actually from Pristina that they are getting is, well, the answer has been in part been given by the Constitutional Court in Pristina, which has decided to nullify certain elements of the agreements reached between the prime ministers in August last year. I just want to remind you that in the fall of last year, just months after the two prime ministers agreed on crucial elements of the establishment of the community of Serb municipalities, crucial principles, instead of going to the constitutional court as it was prescribed by the agreement, going to constitutional court to confirm the agreement on establishing of the community of Serbian municipalities, which was necessary in order to create a legal environment for its existence, because our side again made a concession not to insist on a constitutional law, not to insist on a special law that would sanction and enable the creation of this community. We agreed to do it through a governmental decree of the government in Pristina, which would be confirmed by the constitutional court. So instead of sending it to the constitutional courts to be confirmed, they actually sent it, actually the government did, but the president did it, sent it to the constitutional court to actually contest the agreement in front of the constitutional court, and the court decided to nullify some of the crucial elements that were of importance for the Serbian community, such as direct financing from Belgrade, such as, you know, joint performance of certain municipal functions, and, you know, in Pristina system, municipalities have a lot of competencies they perform, and the Brussels Agreement enables those municipalities to jointly perform their competencies. So it wouldn't be a third level of government, but it would certainly be something that Lady Ashton used to call an institution with political teeth. This is, I remember her saying during our negotiations, the community of Serb municipalities will be an institution with political teeth. So instead of this, we are getting something that is much more similar, through the decision of the constitutional court, much more similar to really what some opposition parties in Pristina are saying, and that is that the community should be a non-governmental organization. And let me be very open about this. We don't need such a community of Serb municipalities. We don't need a community of Serb municipalities that would give the Serb community in Kosovo a lesser degree of rights than envisaged by the agreement between the two prime ministers, because actually, in that case, we would be perfectly fine with what we have now. I mean, I am, as a director of the Office for Kosovo and Metohija, also in charge for functioning of 29 Serb interim municipal councils in Kosovo, which still function within the system of Serbia. And we have 5,800 employees in this system, and these structures, you may call it parallel structures, we don't. But these structures are still functioning. They are providing some services to the citizens. They are post office. There are many elements of the system that are still functioning. Also, what is not contributing to the overall atmosphere is, trying to draw in some very sensitive issues into this heated political debate, such as the functioning of schools or hospitals and things like that. We are often facing problems and troubles with, importing medical supplies for those hospitals because they're not being recognized by the government in Pristina. They're saying that these structures, these hospitals, other medical facilities are illegal, that they are parallel because they are not registered in Pristina system. The same goes for the education structures, and there is also pressure regarding the import of textbooks, school books, and other educational educational assets that are necessary for functioning of those educational institutions. So this is again creating, alongside some occasional security incidents, which sometimes can be quite scary for the Serbian community in Kosovo and Metohija, this creates an uneasy atmosphere amongst the Kosovo Serbs. Now, if you allow me just a couple of words about how Serbs' participation in the government of Kosovo is being perceived in Belgrade, how we perceive this. Personally, my impression is that Pristina is repeating all the same mistakes that we were making back in the 90s when we were when our governments were using, you know, Kosovo Albanians and their political parties as decor in the institutions there. Instead of taking very seriously into account the legitimate interests of the Kosovo Serb community, these people are not being consulted for any important questions. And let me illustrate this with just a couple of examples. We have all heard, who follow, about the recent adoption of the law on Trepča. And this is a company which employs more than 3,000 people in the north of Kosovo, mostly Kosovo Serbs, who, by the way, have very little employment opportunities since 1999, as the entire region is in a very bad economic situation. And Serbs Kalist representatives were not consulted at all about this law. They were given the law half an hour before the governmental session in which the law was adopted. They tried later on in parliament to initiate procedures that are envisaged by the constitution and by the laws for protection of non-majority communities, but all of a sudden all ethnic Albanian Kosovo political parties united and voted against allowing them to, you know, postpone this by 2 weeks in order to introduce some kind of a debate on this question. So there are other major questions in which they were not consulted at all or not taken into account. And if you just take a look at the coalition agreement with which Srpska Lista decided to participate in this government, you will see that practically the only article of this coalition agreement that is being respected is the article in which it says that Serb ministers and deputy ministers will be appointed to the government. Other provisions, such as, you know, enabling municipalities to participate in the privatization process, or such as, you know, creation of two new municipalities, one for the Gorani, one for the Serb community, or a number of other things that were agreed, they're not just not mentioned anymore. The highest officials, actually, of this government are publicly stepping out against these provisions, and they're saying that this will never be implemented or never be done, despite the fact that they have signed this coalition agreement with Srpska Lista representatives. So after what happened with Trepča and after what happened with a similar law on strategic investments, Srpska Lista representatives decided to freeze their activities in the institutions in Pristina. I hear a lot arguments about these people being puppets of Belgrade, or just consulting exclusively with Belgrade on issues and so forth. They were never actually given the chance to feel a part of this team. They were never given a true chance to participate in the decision-making process. And yes, then they are turning to everyone else to look for support, to look for protection of their own interests. I want to leave as much room possible as possible for questions, so I will in a couple of words, maybe if you still allow, I don't know how we are with time, but to say something about the future of this process. I think it could be interesting to say a couple of things about that as well. Despite all of the difficulties that we are facing in this relationship now, I still believe that there is a future to talks between Belgrade and Pristina. It is often being said, even by Prime Ministers Vučić, Rama and others, that Serbs and Albanians are two most numerous nations in the region of Western Balkans. And I think that this is accurate. And I think that reasons of strategic stability actually direct us to talk to each other more, to try to find solutions for problems, And I still believe that giving up on those talks would be much more harmful than continuing to talk. Serbia in the future will remain open for resolving open issues with Pristina. I believe that we can achieve a lot if we agree to isolate our disagreement on the status question. And I do not believe that, resolving the status issue is a necessary prerequisite for normal dialogue, because I don't believe that we can actually at this time at all resolve the status issue. We are never going to, recognize the unilateral declaration of independence. This is a legitimate position. The other side has another position, which is their very firm position, and I don't think that it is in any way likely to change. And I think that we can isolate as much as possible this disagreement and find a new model of functioning in which, with all of our differences, we, our institutions and our peoples get along well, and that we jointly progress to a greater level of economic prosperity and certainty for our citizens. I'm deliberately not speaking very much about the EU integration process, because despite the fact that we all want it very much, it's not entirely in our hands. So in that sense, I want to say that even a solution which would be a solution sui generis, without mutual recognition, which is not at all on the table or not in the cards for us, and I think it's not in the cards for many others in the world, I think a modus vivendi can be found, which can function even when it comes to the European framework. And Europe has actually been historically a house for very many unique solutions, and I think that this can be a European solution as well. I don't think that it is fair to impose the recognition of the unilateral declaration of independence of Serbia, because succession is not a European value, nor is protecting of sovereignty and territorial integrity against European values. Both of these stances are perfectly legitimate in that sense that we are having. So us being against the unilateral declaration of independence of Kosovo and Metohija is not against European values. And our ambition to protect our sovereignty and territorial integrity as recognized by the United Nations is also not against the European values, nor is, as I say, the unilateral declaration of independence per se in line with European values. I will leave it here for now, and I would like very much to answer all of your questions.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I'm sure we're going to have a number of questions. I'm going to take them as I see them, and I'll probably just take in batches of two. So, gentlemen here, please identify yourselves and keep questions, not comments, rather short. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Sabin, actually, from the Republic of Kosovo. Sooner or later, you'll recognize Kosovo as a state. So I've got actually a very short comment, but also a question. In football jargon, in your opinion, what's the current score between Kosovo and Serbia in the negotiations in Brussels? I'm asking you this question as I got the impression that you like using the sports terms in your statements. Is it still 5-0 in favor of Serbia, like you said in August 2015? And what's your opinion on one of the most reputable talk show hosts in Belgrade, Zoran Kesic? Last but not least, yesterday you stated for the Serbian state news agency, Tanjug, that the future generations of Serbs must be prepared to intensify the battle to take Kosovo back to Serbia. I think this kind of discourse in 21st century, nearly 18 years after the end of the last war in the former Yugoslavia, this is means the Kosovo War, is identical to that used by one of the most notorious dictators of the 20th century, Slobodan Milosevic. Thank you.
Did the lady next to you want to ask a question?
Yes, sure. I will go only with a question, and now will be in relation to what Minister already declared. I mean, you mentioned that there were some issues and that Serbia had achieved during this process. You mentioned issues that were implemented during this period. I mean, like local municipalities, like integration of Serbian police and other issues. But my question would go, what Serbian authorities have done to implement these agreements that have been reached during these 5 years dialogue? As you know, I mean, how do you think that you have contributed in normalization with Kosovo, having in consideration that all what Serbia have done during these years was to block Kosovo to move forward, and not even also the Serbian community has suffered from it. I would mention a specific example. For instance, in the municipality of Štrbca, there was this huge project that was planned to be implemented. It was about Brezovica Resort. The majority of population there are Serbs, and because of the threats that the company had from Serbian authorities, they withdrew from this billion project, which would generate like over 5,000 jobs. And their response was that they are withdrawing because Serbian authorities have threatened them for legal issues. And
okay, can we? No. I'm going to hold it there. There's a lot of people who want to ask questions this evening. No. I'm going to hold it there. You've asked a couple of questions. If we have time, once I've been around the room, then I'll obviously let you have another go. But there's a lot there that's already been asked. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. First of all, thank you for mentioning Mr. Kesic. I also sometimes enjoy watching his shows. I think that he's very knowledgeable in doing his job, and he's actually a Serbian version of, Jon Stewart show. He's very similar to that. And regarding the result question, I think that, my mention of the 5-0 result was referring to the talks on August 25th last year. Why did I say, let's just to remind you why I said after that round of talks, why I said 5-0? Well, on the table we had four agreements. It was community of Serbian municipalities, bridge issue, energy, telecom. These were the four issues. So why did I say after these talks, why did I say 5-0? Well, first of all, I thought that it was extremely important that the two prime ministers have agreed to finally implement the agreement on the community of Serb municipalities. This was for us an important score, if you want, an important point on the scoreboard. The second part was that the agreement on telecom, agreement on the dialing code, was done in such a way that our position regarding the status was unchanged. I mean, the dialing code was to be issued, but as a dialing code for geographic area, and it was to be listed with the ITU as such, with a clear reference that it is under Resolution 1244 and so forth. And the Telekom Serbia daughter company was supposed to be licensed for work on the entire territory of Kosovo and Metohija. So the third agreement on energy was with this agreement on implementing the agreement on energy, two daughter companies of Elektroprivreda Srbija, Serbian power company, were supposed to be established, one for trading electric energy and the other one for distribution services, which is again better than what we had in the agreement from 2013. The agreement on the bridge was done in such a way that envisaged also the creation of a pedestrian zone in the center of Kosovska Mitrovica, which was crucial for the sense of security for the Serbian community there. And also it included the delineation between two Mitrovicas, which was one of the key requests of the Serbian community in this region, and as I said previously, a source of a lot of tension. So we were quite pleased with the way these four agreements were negotiated between the four between the prime ministers. And the fifth element, why did I say 5-0? The fifth element is that as a result of adopting four such, I would say, positive agreements, the fact is that as a result of this, Serbia got to open its chapters in the EU accession negotiations. So we were, in my view, clearly on the gain when it came to all these five issues. Of course, maybe I should have been more careful not to say that it was zero on the other side, and I acknowledge this, because I don't think that the a result of any talks should be that any side should be losing anything. And I don't think that actually Pristina side lost a lot. I think that we did not gain what we expected because there was a failure to deliver and to implement on these four agreements in the way we would want to see them. Regarding the statement about the statement that you mentioned, this gives me a good opportunity to say that I'm sometimes amazed and shocked about how statements are being translated and published and interpreted often in the media. And very often when I say something in Belgrade, I cannot recognize what I said when I read it in the media in Pristina. I'm often, you know, going like this and saying, is this really possible? So a couple of times I tried giving interviews directly to the media in Pristina, and I think it was quite successful. I went to RTK in Pristina, RTK studio in Pristina, and after you know, being guest for 20 minutes there, I got they tried to expel me unsuccessfully from Gračanica. But as I say, I'm trying to engage more directly with the media there. What I said actually, and what I will repeat now, is that I believe that we have that our, you know, struggle to retain our presence and influence in Kosovo and Metohija is legitimate. I think that our struggle for Kosovo and Metohija is not just territorial struggle. It is in a way a struggle for sovereignty and territorial integrity, but it is also a spiritual struggle. It is a struggle to keep and retain an identity of a nation. The identity of the Serbian people is closely connected historically to this region and to this territory. And I was in that speech at the Belgrade Book Fair yesterday. I was also saying that nothing that we do in the future regarding Kosovo and Metohija should be at anyone else's expense. But I didn't see the media in Pristina cover or carry that message at all. I repeated it at least three times, that everything that we do in the favor and to the benefit of the Serbs in Kosovo should not be to the expense of anyone else. But unfortunately, the media much more like to, you know, put things in their own context. Now, to answer our colleague's also question regarding what we are doing in the implementation of the agreements and why are we blocking Kosovo and so forth and regarding Brezovica. It all depends on from which perspective you look at things. Also, you mentioned, you know, that you're coming from the Republic of Kosovo. My view is somewhat different. You believe that we should be separate. I believe that we are, as they like to say here, that we are better together. But I believe that any view on this is legitimate as long as we keep our discussion civilized and peaceful. We are not blocking Pristina institutions in the development of the economy. We are not blocking Pristina institutions in fight against corruption. We are not blocking Pristina in resolving a number of crucial issues that are of importance to the community that lives there.
The threat that you made to a French company, and they were obliged to...
Regarding Brezovica, let me tell you that Our interest in Brezovica is very legitimate. When you speak about,
please.
When you speak about the Brezovica ski resort, it should be taken into account that this ski resort was constructed in the 1980s with an almost $200 million investment by a company from Belgrade called Genex. That was a very big company, and its branch Inex Ski Center is the owner actually of this ski resort. It has all of the documents confirming that it has invested in this ski resort and constructed it up to the last cent. And currently, this ski center, although in a very poor shape, is still being operated by those people hired by this company. And we have, of course, opposed the grab of those assets because this company has legitimate claims over these assets. And we have also informed the shareholders of potential investors that this is the case. But you should also know that prior to this, we have tried to engage with the government in Pristina and tried to encourage them to jointly look for investors. We have also offered, since this is a Serb majority municipality, we have also offered to invest through some people who already own some very nice ski resorts, for example, in Kopaonik and other places, to create a very nice ski resort there as well. But this was completely disregarded. They opted for the other option, to completely ignore the previous owner. And unfortunately, then we were in the position to have to react and inform the potential investors that someone is trying to sell our own property. You know.
Okay. Oh, God. That's rather a lot of questions. Misha.
Okay. Misha Gavrilovic. Belgrade, born like you, but I've been living 50 years here in the UK. My question is really about what can only describe as the precarious nature of the Serbian people who are still in Kosovo. I'm somewhat surprised that you figure that, according to your estimates, there are 120,000 still in Kosovo. The Kosovo census was carried out in the year 2011, so just over 5 years ago, and the results are published. In the area, they're not for the whole of Kosovo, just that area which is under the control of KFOR. Out of 140,000, only 25,000 remain. 80% are no longer there. So the rest, 95%, must have fled to northern Mitrovica. We know that 200,000 have been registered in Serbia by the UNHCR as refugees from Kosovo. Hardly any of them have remained. My question is obviously the hugely precarious position of the people in northern Mitrovica, who have obviously an entirely hostile government to face. And the issue here, what is the European Union doing about this? Have they in any way encouraged a return of those who have been effectively ethnically cleansed from their home?
Misha, thank you very much. Alexandra.
Yes, hello, I'm Alexandra from Novi Sad. I study doing a PhD in current university. I just have a quick question. How is Kosovo portrayed in the Serbian media? I'm just wondering more specifically, is this a taboo topic, especially like the Brussels agreements and in general the lifestyle of the citizens, both Serbs and Kosovo?
Thank you very much. I'm going to take actually a few more because we are rapidly running out of time. Tena, I know you had a question.
Very briefly, how would you define success for Serbian policy in Kosovo? Because, I mean, Serbia, at the end of the day, you know, doesn't have law enforcement in Kosovo, doesn't collect taxes. We saw about your struggles about, defining the struggles regarding the public ownership of companies and the deadlock that is being taken there. And if I may, this actually contradicts your statement that practicalities, practical matters are put first, because if there's a deadlock in, you know, this key resource like Brezovica and other aspects, it directly contradicts your point about putting, you know, financial enhancement first. So I was just wondering, what does actually Serbia want in Kosovo? You know, if the status process cannot go on, what would success be?
Okay. Lady there.
My name is Joan Pierce. I'm a retired official of the European Commission, and I've worked in Kosovo. You said that the joining the European Union is an important objective for Serbia. Kosovo also has aspirations to join the European Union. If in the near or not so near future Kosovo becomes a candidate country, how sustainable is your position on status, even if it is compatible with European values?
Okay, lady at the back, and then I'm going to give the ambassador the final word.
Just very quickly, with the current situation in Western Europe, with the crazy US elections, the EU being distracted with Brexit negotiations, has political pressure on both Pristina and Belgrade lessened to continue dialogue as they get distracted with their own issues?
Dealing with the ambassador of Kosovo, or if I used Mr. Juri's terminology, the ambassador of Kosovo and Metodia. In fact, I do have some sympathy for Mr. Juri's job because he was handed this hot potato by his government, which I used to hold this same potato to some extent because I was number two in the delegation and before I arrived here. So, but it's been much nicer after I arrived here, so take my advice and go find an embassy somewhere. If I can make three points very briefly. One on the goals we share. The goals that we have for this dialogue are three. It's the improvement of the lives of the people on the ground, all of them. The improvement of the neighborly relations with all our neighbors, including our northern neighbor Serbia, and also making progress towards our European agenda, which I think these are the very same goals that the EU has put forth, has submitted for this dialogue. The second point is about the implementation. Mr. Juric emphasized many times the word agreed, we agreed, we agreed. It's a fact that we have agreed many, many agreements, many deals in Brussels, some 30 of them, as you mentioned. But according to, if you don't believe me, according to an NGO which has monitored the implementation of the agreements both in Serbia and Kosovo, there are only some four agreements which have been implemented so far. So, and those, I'm sure that 99% of those agreements have not been implemented by the Serbian side, which was reflected in criticism in the EU progress reports, and a new report will come out very shortly. So, agreeing or closing deals is one thing, but implementing the agreements is another thing, and the lack of the implementation of the agreements is in fact eroding the trust of the people in this dialogue. Therefore, we face a stiff opposition, not just by the opposition in Kosovo, but also by the people, which is a very unpopular thing to do by the government, you know, to engage in this sort of dialogue. And this coupled with some of your very unhelpful statements recently. I'm sure there have been statements on our side as well, but I don't think these statements help anyone or help the dialogue to achieve its stated goals. My third point is the economy. By trying to strangle Kosovo from all sides, by trying to portray it as a failed state, will not help anyone, including the local Serbs. And if you care more about the people rather than the land, then you will help Kosovo develop its economy by not scaring off the investors as the way you did by sending a letter to the potential French consortium, which was ready to invest some 400 million euros into Brezovica. And by the way, the main beneficiaries of this investment would have been the local Serbs in the region. And also on Trepča. Trepča is not a property of Serbia. It's a property of the people of Kosovo, including the Serbs who live in Kosovo. And the government of Kosovo had to act on a deadline set by the privatization agency, which has a board with the Serb representatives, with an international representative as well. There was a deadline by which the Trepča would go bankrupt. So the government had to act in order to change the legal status so that foreign investment could come in. Because without an investment, you cannot even remotely claim that there would be any benefit for anyone, including for you, or for the local Serbs or Albanians in Trepča.
Thank you very much. There's rather a lot there to get through, but thank you very much.
If I was to make a joke, I would say that our embassy is not speaking in the same voice.
get along very well.
I just want to, maybe starting from the last thing that was mentioned here and I have written down, I will try to as quickly as possible respond. You mentioned the ownership of Trepča. Trepča was not, even before 1999, considered to be state-owned or socially-owned company. It was considered to be a shareholder society with 56% ownership owned by the development fund and other parts of the shares owned by various commercial enterprises, including even a Greek company which owned quite a percentage of this mine. So
it was just
to answer you. So this was the shareholder structure of Trepča. Now this shareholder structure, this is you say Milošević shareholder structure of Trepča, was in 2013 acknowledged by the government in Pristina, because the management of Trepča was smart enough to register all the creditors of Trepča, and all the creditors of Trepča were registered with institutions in Pristina. And the reason why this law was adopted now was that some decision makers there knew that on November 1st, if Trepča was not nationalized by the institutions in Pristina, even in Pristina system, the board of creditors would get official rights to manage Trepča. I don't want to speak historically about the ownership rights of Trepča. You know, at one point, even the British were owning, managing Trepča, and after the Second World War, the Yugoslav government then paid to the British company which operated Trepča and bought Trepča back. So, in our view, there are some clear evidence that speak about the status of Trepča. But we should definitely do more, and we can do more together about creating economic opportunities for all. One of our proposals for Trepča that was again completely disregarded in this decision-making process was to help the management of Trepča in looking for strategic partners, because Trepča needs investors. Trepča needs to find people abroad who are ready to modernize, who are ready to increase the production and to create a situation in which not only Trepča North is profiting and is profitable, but the entire company. This was, however, disregarded. It is now too late for this, and I hope that legal mechanisms that are being implemented will bring us to a better situation than the one that we have now. Regarding scaring off investors and so forth, it's not the case that we are scaring off anyone. We want the question of property to be resolved very hard. We want it very much, because it is of crucial, of essential interest of Serbia and of the Serbian community in Kosovo. But it is actually the government in Pristina that is continuously refusing discussion on the topic of property. And also the EU is not making things easier, because it is saying that, you know, they can only facilitate, which is completely absurd, they are saying that they can only facilitate dialogue on what the two sides agree. Well, let me tell you immediately, we don't need at all the discussion on telecom, because we are perfectly fine as with things as they are, because we have a dialing code, and we have Telecom Serbia operating and functioning within the Kosovo and Metohija. So we don't need the discussion on telecom. We also don't need the discussion on energy, because our operators are working and providing power to the north of Kosovo. But we do engage with the government in Pristina on these issues, and we do talk, and we do want to be flexible and even accommodate many of the interests that Pristina has, because we believe that it is in mutual interest to, you know, make concessions to each other where it is important, where it is important for both communities. And I believe that we can do this despite the fact that we don't agree on the status issue, because a marriage certificate should be a marriage certificate even without the coat of arms of Serbia or the coat of arms of Pristina. And, you know, people should not be forced to go to the municipality in Pristina to re-register or remarry because someone does not recognize their certificate because they say that it is issued by parallel institutions. This is the type of things that we should be resolving. Now, regarding the question of numbers, that you have mentioned, which I think is extremely important. Just a couple of numbers. I don't think that anyone has exact numbers. But according to UNHCR, there are 247,000 internally displaced persons still living in central Serbia. No one is speaking about it. 17 years have passed since the war. Pre-war population of Serb, ethnic Serb population of Pristina was approximately more than 40,000. And this is, you know, when we take into account census from 1981 and later censuses which were boycotted by Kosovo Albanians. But definitely more than 40,000 Serbs used to live in Pristina. Similar with Prizren, similar with Uroševac, similar with Peć, similar with Đakovica, complete failure of the process of return, despite the fact that many millions of euros were invested. And according, again, to UNHCR data, the sustainable percentage of sustainable return is only 1.8, which is incredible. Even in the conflict between, Hutus and Tutsis, after the war, there was a greater percentage of return. And we are speaking about an environment in which the international community had the responsibility to create conditions for this. There is no other explanation than the lack of political will among political elites in Pristina for this coming into life. Because, for example, in Bosnia, we have the same type of property agency as we have in Pristina. And 90% of the property in Bosnia was returned to its pre-war owners. But in Pristina, we still have, according, again, this is not Marko Djuric figures, these are OSCE figures that I'm speaking about. We have 80,000 apartments and homes still occupied by illegal tenants. And Serbs are not able to return to these homes. They're not able to sell them. They're not able to do anything with them. And this is the problem that contributes to such dire figures. And many people feel very bad. You've mentioned Kosovska Mitrovica. I think that the worst situation for non-majority communities, primarily for the Serbs, is actually in the western part, in what we call Metohija, where in the entire geographical half of Kosovo and Metohija, there are fewer than 3,000 Serbs left. And I put a full stop here. Now, regarding Kosovo and Metohija in the media, I think that actually in Belgrade, we deal with Kosovo and Metohija only when there is some kind of trouble, only when there is some kind of a problem. Unlike what is the prevailing opinion in Pristina, where they believe that everyone's speaking about Kosovo in Belgrade all the time, I think that this topic is very low on the priority list, unfortunately, of most of the people in the political elites. I was just yesterday at the book fair complaining that I believe that, unfortunately, most of the heads of MP groups in Serbian parliament are not able to list leaders of key political parties in Pristina, which is catastrophic for our interests. I think that we should pay a lot more attention to what's going on in Kosovo if we want to achieve and forward our goals. I was speaking about the necessity of creating greater interaction amongst young people as well, because I don't believe that even a small percentage of Belgrade University students have the opportunity to visit Pristina, or Pristina University students to visit Belgrade. And I think that we can also work together to change that, to create more interaction between the youth. We are definitely ready to encourage that in any way possible. One of the very important questions that were raised was what would be the success of the Serbian policy in Kosovo, having in mind all of the difficult circumstances. Also, I will connect this, if you allow, with the question of compatibility of our policy with our EU accession goals. Well, let me tell you, these negotiations have lasted 4.5 years. These 4.5 years have bought us time. They have enabled the Vučić government, the first government in which he was the deputy prime minister, but the Serbian Progressive Party was the major party, and then the second government in which he was prime minister. This has allowed him to focus on economic issues, to focus on modernizing our society, reforming our institutions, and bringing the country back from its knees from everything that happened during the 90s. So, I mean, when it comes to the compatibility of what we are doing with the EU accession process, I think that it is highly compatible, because I think that, you know, conducting internal reforms is something that is necessary, but also creating a political environment of stability is crucial. And this is why the government is making such an effort to create better relations internally with Pristina, but also externally with Bosnia and Herzegovina, Montenegro, Macedonia, and all of the others.
My question related to Kosovo becoming a candidate country for EU membership and how consistent that is with your position on status.
We have taken the obligation under the Brussels Agreement not to obstruct each other's respective EU path. Now, this is a very ambiguous formulation that we don't interpret as giving Pristina, you know, carte blanche for accessing international organizations as an independent country. I think that we will be directed to speak to each other and find the minimal common denominator in the future. I don't think that, I don't think that there is any reason for us to give up on our legitimate rights and interests when it comes to Kosovo and Metohija. I would have to present you a very long list of reasons why we don't want to recognize the unilateral declaration of independence. And since I know that many of you are studying this topic very long, I don't want to burden this conversation with this. But let me just say that I don't think that if there are EU member states that don't recognize an independent Kosovo, a country cannot access the EU without recognizing. If there are countries that are already members, like Spain, like Cyprus, and others, that do not recognize an independent Kosovo, why should a country fulfill a requirement of recognizing it to become a member? There is no logic in that. And I think that the ultimate goal, my dream about relations in the future would be to have such a normal interaction between people and institutions, with disagreements isolated so much that, you know, the disagreement that we have becomes a historic curiosity while the communities live in peace and people and goods circulate without any obstructions and obstacles whatsoever. I want to feel free in Gračanica. I want to feel free in Pristina. I want to see all the people who used to live there to live there again. And I want, you know, these type of discussions to be normal, to be held any place and anywhere in the region, you know, because this is something that I believe we should all strive for. I apologize if I haven't answered.
I just have to ask one thing. This is very important. It's about Serbs who live there. Because I went twice recently to Kosovo and stay there. Some Serbian communities, they live in ghettos. If you heard about Borso ghetto, that sort of thing. So, that's true. So, I would like to ask you, because we have on daily basis attacks on Serbs, trying to kidnap children, and so on. How do you think that you can protect? What do you do to protect Serbs who live there? That they are safe to go out, to go to the street, to go to the shop? How do you think to do that? Because sometimes, what I read in newspapers, you are not allowed to go. Kosovo government are not letting you to go to Kosovo.
Well, thank you for that question. I'm also sometimes being ridiculed by the newspapers in Belgrade, which I also find funny to an extent. They say, what kind of a chief negotiator are you if you cannot even negotiate your own visits? I do not think that it is useful to limit anyone's freedom of movement or freedom of speech in the 21st century. I actually think it is scandalous, and I don't think that there is any foundation or basis for that. But my problems are minor to what many people are still facing in their day-to-day lives, and I think that in that sense you're very right to mention this. After all, it's not just us mentioning this at this talk today, but this is something that is recorded by various levels of international presence there. I want to say that the overall political climate is allowing for an atmosphere in which there are still some cities and areas which are off limits to members of certain ethnicities. For example, recent attempts by Serb pilgrims to go to Djakovica, or people who were expelled to go to Djakovica or to go to Mušutište, they were prevented, and there was no professional reaction of the police there. Now your question was how to resolve these issues.
How to protect
these people? I believe that we are best protecting the Serbian community actually in Kosovo and Metohija by engaging in dialogue with Kosovo Albanians, however difficult this might be, since we are not, since 1999, present there in other ways. We are relying very heavily on also international security presence. There is no other means other than to rely on this. And here I want to make a point also, if I don't know if we have time, I want to say that there is a reason why our government is against the transformation of so-called Kosovo security force into a Kosovo army. It's not only that under Kumanovo military technical agreement there are just two armed forces that can be present in this territory, and this is KFOR NATO-led mission and the Army of Serbia. It is also a fact that I think that this region has already seen too much militarism, too much arms, too much suffering from various militaries, and arming an area which has an unresolved status and open crucial political issues actually seems to me like, you know, oiling the fire, fueling the fire. And this is something that would also be perceived by Serbia, since it would be done without Serbia's consent. It would be perceived by Serbia as a potential destabilizing factor. And then Serbia would have to look, you know, for friends on whom it can rely in order to ensure balance of power in this region. And this could affect also the agenda of Serbia's relations with, you know, other countries. So I think it would be extremely imprudent to go in the direction of the transformation of the Kosovo Security Force. As I say, it is not just against the existing agreements, but it would be politically unwise.
We've gone on a little bit longer than we anticipated, but I really do have to draw a line under this now. Thank you very much to all of you for coming this evening, and I would especially like to say a huge thank you to Mr. Djuric for making an appearance here. We know that there are a lot of difficulties that still exist between Serbia and Kosovo, and I think, like a lot of observers, you know, I've been worried that what seemed to be a very positive process is now starting to face real problems. And so I think it's incredibly helpful that you were able to come here and at least give us a perspective from Belgrade on where things are going. So thank you very much indeed.